Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
I would like to now introduce Kirsty Seaborn, who is the founder of the Embodied Parent Education. She is a compassion fatigue educator and a leadership embodiment coach, amongst many other things. So she has a vast array of qualifications and experience. Today she's going to be talking about shame-proof parenting, which I think is going to be a really interesting subject. So she's going to be talking about how to break the intergenerational pattern of shame and reclaim your parent power. So thank you, Kirsty. I'm going to hand over to you now.
Thank you, Georgina. And thank you. I really appreciate everyone that is joining me today. And some lovely cheerleaders out there as well that I know. So especially brave because it is talking about shame, and shame isn't something that, you know, wants to be talked about. It likes to stay hidden. That's the nature of shame. And when I was thinking about, when I was asked about what, what theme I wanted to talk about at the conference, I didn't think about it. It was just like, I want to talk about shame. I think that's really important. And I checked it out with a few people. They were like, yeah, that's brilliant. That sounds really exciting. And then of course, sent it all off and ended up being in a sort of backslide. I have to say that word really carefully, otherwise it comes out a little bit wrong. Backslide of shame, thinking, you know, there's all these amazing experts and people out there. And, you know, am I worthy of doing this? Is this something that I should be doing? I'm not good enough. So all of those things, and which made me then actually go, do you know what? I am actually an expert in shame. And I wanted to talk about it because shame is, you know, although we don't talk about it, it's behind some of our own and our children's worst behaviors. And it is something that is always really present, even if we don't talk about it directly. It's really present in the conversations and in the work that I do with my parents and families, which is primarily a lot to do with child-parent violence and parents who are at risk of compassion fatigue. So it just felt really, really important for me to talk about it. And hopefully there'll be some stuff in here that you can get a little nugget to take away with you. And we're also going to, we'll do a practice at the end where we can actually kick shame to the curb as well, because it's not all about meeting it nicely and being compassionate with it, because some of it is about being accountable for what is, you know, mine to carry, what has never been mine to take on, and, you know, what really shouldn't be taken on at all. So I work with the body in parenting, because parenting isn't something that we just do with our heads or sitting on a yoga mat or in a classroom. It's a full-on visceral emotional experience, and it is a relational experience, and it is when we are in relationship with our children, that our attachment and our survival and our stress systems get activated. So, you know, it doesn't matter how good our intentions are about being, you know, a compassionate and peaceful parent, all of that goes out the window when we're kind of meeting resistance and defiance and rejection and opposition. So it's the body that holds the charge, but it is also the body that you know, gets us really in touch with our intuition and our wisdom. So, and it also, it keeps us in touch with the really deep nourishment, those deep resources that we need to keep us going over the long term in our parenting. So before we begin then, let's invite the body into this conversation. So I invite you into a short centering practice. And we do centering because it helps us to come home to the body and to feel more of our aliveness. And as we go through today, hopefully you'll start to, you'll get make more sense of that. Centering is particular in the way that we bring and direct our conscious attention towards something that matters to us, that we care about. And in that way, we are kind of organizing ourselves so that we bring a bit of choice and some self-agency into our parenting world, where sometimes we can actually just feel pretty helpless, pretty powerless, and pretty hopeless. And also it helps us to, the more that we notice of ourselves, the more we can sense in to what is going on in the inner world with our child. So the more I can discern, you know, what is going on with me, what is my child, and what we are co-creating together between us. And that's really important. Otherwise we risk, you know, getting swept up in our child's moods and behaviors. We then don't, you know, it helps us to stay secure in what matters to us beyond this situation and beyond this behavior. So first of all, just bring some attention to your body and notice the aliveness that might be going on there. It might be some streaming, some pulsing, some heat, vibration. I notice your heart beating. Mine's beating quite hard. But, you know, that's for me now. I used to just want to ground all of this aliveness and try and control that rather than appreciate the fact that, you know, whew, okay, that actually means that I'm alive and I'm present and I have energy, and appreciating that actually helps to soften it. So we're not wanting to change anything or, you know, suppress anything. That's what not centering is about. But just meet it there, say hello to it. And then we're going to organize ourselves on purpose and design ourselves around a resource that can actually be quite useful for us in parenting. Centering becomes very unique. It's a very, very individualized. It often comes out from a little spark of inspiration or joy or something that is really nourishing to my clients. So this one I'm going to take a little bit from Wendy Palmer's Leadership Embodiment Centering work. And first of all, we're going to lengthen our spines with the breath. And we're going to inhale, lengthen up the spine, exhale, a long exhale. And as we exhale, we're going to soften down the front of our bodies, soften the eyes, soften the belly, dropping down into the feet. So we'll do that a couple more times. And the sense here is that we're inviting the adult back into the room. When we stress, we regress. So one of us at least needs to be the adult in the room. So it better be us, really. So inhale, lengthen up the spine, and exhale, soften down the front, softening the eyes, softening the belly. So this is getting a little bit in touch with more of our innate worth and our innate dignity. And I want to bring in some more support, because especially when we're struggling parents, and if we have, if we're struggling, you know, a single parent, for example, sometimes we don't have the support available to us that we need. So we need to use what we've got. So let's invite in the support of the floor, and let the floor come up and meet your feet. And bring in the support of the chair that you're sitting on, or the surface that you're sitting on, if it's the floor. Imagine that the sole job of the floor and the chair is to support you. It's got its own nervous system, and it is reaching up to give you that support. And then let's go to the top of the head, and let's go into the organs. We don't often enter into the organs, but think about the brain in the skull, and imagine the skull supporting the brain. So the brain can rest in the support and protection of the skull. And the eyes, invite the eyes to rest in the support and the protection of the sockets. So you don't have to hold on, they don't have to work so hard. And let the heart, allow the heart to soften if it wants to, invite it to soften, knowing that it is protected by the lobes of the lungs, the diaphragm, and the ribs outside of that. So it has this protection. So that can allow itself to soften as well. And the belly, let the belly and the organs drop into the full support of the pelvis. And if there's still, when you track, there's a little bit of contraction, that's absolutely fine. You can just bring some kind of support and let that contraction know that, you know, it's okay, it doesn't need to do anything, but bring something up just to meet it. So it can just, you know, you can have something else do the job for a little while. So it just takes a bit of a tea break. Okay, you can get back to that later. And now bring, oh, and also let's bring a support with us as well. So if you have got someone that is really a steadfast presence in your life and has a protective quality about them, bring them to sit alongside you. Imagine them there. So as we're going through this webinar, and of course we're talking about shame, even the word may bring up a little bit of activation. Know that you've got someone alongside there, that they can just put their hand on your back or your shoulder. And bring to mind something that makes you smile, or bring some warmth into your heart. It might be the Dalai Lama with his kind laughing eyes. It might be your puppy. It might be, you know, like smelling a beautiful flower, and just bring some of that warmth into your body and allow that to soak through you a little bit. And as you begin to feel that expanding, give it a color or imagine it as light and spread that color and that light a little bit away from your skin into the space. So you're expanding that warmth and those kind eyes and that compassionate nature out into the space, to the front, to the back, to the left, to the right. And if you feel able, expand that right out to the corners of the room, behind you, to the sides in front of you. to expanding that light, expanding that energy out. And if you feel able, expand that out to include everybody within the space as well, everybody within this call. Our bodies map whatever we bring, you know, in our attention, our awareness, as an extension of ourselves. So in this way, you can imagine yourself including your children in your space, in your presence, giving them that sense that, you know, no matter how ugly or scary or rude or challenging their being, there's nothing about their inner life that is going to be excluded from that circle. But you're giving yourself the space that can allow the behavior to dissipate a little bit into this space, so you're able to see it a little bit from a distance and then bring some more curiosity to it. It doesn't have to land on you. And as you do this, and as you're expanding out into the space, just notice whether you've left your support. Have you, as you've expanded out to relate to everybody, have you let your support, have you overextended a little bit and got swept up by what's going on out there? So if you have, just bring yourself a little bit back, get back in touch with the support, with the ground, with the space. You can imagine the space as pillows. That's quite a good one. Bring the supports and then expand out into the space around you. Beautiful. And then just brush the body down a little bit, brush the arms. Okay. So thank you for joining me with that centering. How do you feel after that? Did you find that useful? I hope that was really helpful to you. And so let's have that as a resource for us as we go in. Talk about Oak Streamly. Thank you. Yes, thank you. So, feel yourself. It's really good to feel yourself, isn't it? And rejuvenating. Beautiful. Feel calm. Good. I feel much more into myself. Thank you. Obviously, please hold anything that I say today with lightness and a bit of skepticism. I'm not definitive on shame. And I'm pretty biased because most of my teachers as well have been somatic based mentors. So, you know, there are always limitations and strengths to these things as well as insights. And it's a really big topic. I can only share a little glimpse, but I picked out a few themes that I think wanted to have a voice here today. I'm going to probably use my notes for quite a lot of it and soon through some of it. I want to get like a kind of at least a 10 minute practice and another one in the middle. So otherwise I'll get all off topic. So first of all, shame. So even the word is extremely loaded. So I'm quite interested to know from you, when I say shame, what does that bring to mind? What are the statements? What's the beliefs maybe that you hold when I mention shame? Being wrong, guilty, yeah. That's definitely on the spectrum. Shame on you and me, yes. Embarrassed, numbness. Yes, guilt, embarrassment, ashamed of being a woman, that you don't exist, yes. I'm bad, devastated. Yes, yes. Okay, let's move on from that a little bit because that's quite tricky. We don't want to start sliding into this shame pit. So those are the statements. Now, what about any feelings that might go with that? You know, like sort of deflation, sadness, other kinds of feelings that go with that. Heavy chested, yeah, disgust, frozen, stuck, small, yes. And what about the body? Kind of any, what happens? What's your posture shrinking? Yeah, yeah, head down, collapse, cold, tight chest, heavy body, yes, okay. Thank you. Right, now recenter, because that's all quite heavy. So did you see how I also started to collapse as I was even just reading all of those? So thank you for those shares. And let's just make sure that we bring that support back in, because we really just, you know, we're not doing these practices just because they're some interesting idea. We actually do need to bring them into our moment-to-moment practice. So guilt was an interesting one there. I'm interested in guilt, the fact that, because people say that guilt is different from shame. Now what's, and what's interesting, this apparently that shame actually can be counted as an emotion because it has a, its own unique face expression, whereas guilt doesn't. So there does actually seem to be, you know, something that separates those two. Two things as well. And as you can see, we've all got a very unique flavor, a unique taste about how shame shows up for us. And that is because shame itself binds with other emotions. It doesn't tend to exist by itself. It tends to bind with the beliefs and the emotions that, and particularly the emotions that were being expressed to us when we first experienced shame. So yeah, so that's why, and a lot of those are showing the kinds of the behaviors. Oh, and what about behaviors that you might see in your children or yourself as well? What kinds of behaviors do you think you might see? It is contagious, yes. Exactly that, it is contagious, yes. Anger, destructiveness, attack, self-sabotage, foggy thinking, start hitting, criticizing, yes, isolation. So those are usually the defenses against shame. Although shame might be hidden, we can certainly see it coming out. And the main kinds of behaviors are attack, self or other, denying or withdrawing. So I want to just show you three definitions of shame, because that gives us an idea about where we want to go. So shame is a socializing mechanism. It goes across cultures and it goes across mammals, and we all experience shame in that way. Some three definitions: it's a secret disruptor of family harmony, it's a break in the interpersonal bridge, it's a parasympathetic break, an excited state, fast track physiological response that can overwhelm us. So it's secret because it hides out in disguise. And that's really important, because then if we don't know if it's shame that we're dealing with, we might end up escalating the situation and consequencing behaviors for the wrong reason. A break in the interpersonal bridge. That means that we're needing to, we feel, when we're shamed, we tend to feel rejected, we feel isolated, we feel excluded. And it's a break in the excited state. So I'm going to talk about that, because that is why shame, so all of this just shows us why shame might be there. So every society uses shame. My dog got shamed the other day. Even if we've got no intention not to shame, we might do a beautiful job of limit setting, but our child will still probably have some degree of shame, because it's designed to halt action, any action that's likely to put the tribe at risk of danger. But it's the intensity and the duration that makes the difference. So yesterday, my 14-year-old got out the car in the car park. He had earphones on, looking at his phone. He began walking straight towards the car that was reversing. So I had to shout out really loud what he was doing. And, you know, like, stop, get off the phone, which meant everyone turned to look. So if we're thinking about healthy shame or toxic shame, which shame do you think that was? You got any ideas? Healthy. Okay, so lots about healthy. Actually, we don't know yet. We don't know yet because we haven't got the next piece of the information. Because the most important piece about shame is we're in the relationship, and then there's a rupture within the relationship, and then we make the repair. So it's the repair piece that's really important. So that would really depend very much on the way that I moved back into the relationship. If I was like, you stupid idiot, what were you thinking? Why were you doing that? That is likely to lead to a shame situation. But you know, if I come back with a quiet voice and I'm sort of like, whoa, you know, that was kind of a pretty scary situation. I really had to raise my voice and, you know, are you okay? And mend that little bridge. That's what's important, because if I don't do that, you know, it's the short ruptures. It's the ruptures in the relationship actually that build attachment, security, and resiliency, and also helps to build up our future capacity for dealing with disappointment and rejection in relationship, because we get that sense of self-worth that, you know, we are loved, and that we can trust that even if we make mistakes, we are going to still sustain that relationship. The other bit, key part of shame is that, you know, because it's that halt in that it really is this really strong shutdown of this escalating energy. But, you know, when we're little and we're babies or we're toddlers, we get all this excitement, all this energy, this arousal to go long for things, to go reach for things, to, you know, to reach for contact or reach for the thing that we're desiring. And then it's that sudden shutdown. It's a parasympathetic break that just comes in and it shuts us down. And if we have that too much, you know, this sudden rapid transition, and we're going to pull back from that excitement, pull back from mobilizing on that energy, then we're actually going to stop and give up actually being able to reach for what we care about at all. So those are some of those really interesting pieces that I'm going to take into the next part of it. I was going to talk very quickly about the death mother and the death mother energy, which I might just look at my notes for this so we don't run out too quickly. The death mother energy, because I want to talk about accountability and a little bit about why I do this work. And I use my notes because time is getting on. So and I need to get to what we need to do about shame. So the archetypal death mother symbolizes women whose behaviors or feelings threaten the lives of their children. That can be across the spectrum. Toko Parr, an author, she mentions, she says, before you even think about attempting something new, asserting your voice, or stepping up towards change, the death mother's there, disapproving, denigrating, repulsed by your impulse for expression and joy. She only has to look at you, raise a single eyebrow, for your whole body to turn to stone. And I want to be clear, when I'm talking about the death mother energy, I'm not talking necessarily about a mother. This is any caregiver, any teacher, any educator can express, and society can express the caregiver energy. I first came across the death mother energy at the beginning of my fostering journey because I was wanting to reconcile my idea of being a compassionate parent with the reality of what I was discovering about the parents who seemed to be so capable of harm and abuse and abandonment. They weren't fairy tale evil stepmothers sending their children to the forest to be beheaded. They were living, breathing mums and dads. I came to recognize them as also being under the influence of the death mother. And a few years later, I met her again after adopting my son. And this time I was the one that was doing the abandoning, sitting in a social worker office, feeling defeated. I could no longer look after this child. I was not good enough. I was failing him. It was best somebody else parented him because I could not only keep him safe from himself, but I felt I was no longer certain to keep him safe from me. I was so exhausted from cycles of shame, rage, and rejection. I still had deep love for this child. And in fact, I would die for him. I didn't blame him. But the point is, I still didn't feel that was enough. I was not enough to be a mother to this child who needed so much more than me. And I felt like the most despicable human being in the world. What kind of mother feels so inadequate that they give up on their child? And the other point is, I got so far before seeking help, and it was the shame that kept me isolated, as I know it does many others. And this is where I find Danielle Seef explains in her essay, The Death Mother, the death mother as nature's shadow, is really interesting. She explains from an anthropological perspective how Western culture has idolized mothering and believes that most of human history, the death mother has been part of life. Ancestral mothers raised their children in a range of different circumstances, and we evolved a range of emotions to cope with that. So we're a medley of conscious and unconscious feelings and behaviors that wax and wane depending on circumstances. With lots of support, death mother has less influence, but when times are tough enough, death mother re-emerges. So this isn't a desirable or a way that we want to be living, but it does bring some compassion for when we see fellow struggling parents. We tend to see them as less than human or as fundamentally inadequate. And that leads to more shame, which feels intolerable, which leads to more harm for our kids. So I really feel, I do my work because I think we have to take accountability for creating a different world, for imagining a different one. And understanding death mother energy helps to transform and helps us to know how to support and be with compassion with parents. And to recognize it's the degree to which we feel resourced and nourished and supported, that is what makes difference to parents, not how much we're diminished and ashamed. But also society has taken on the death mother and diminishes and shames parents in spades, and we can't live up to its impossible standards no matter how much we try or try and diminish ourselves to do it. People are literally killing themselves for it. We see death mother energy in the way that society treats and demonizes and pathologizes children as well as their parents, when it's trauma or just trying to take care of safety and dignity and belonging for ourselves. So this gives us an opportunity to step up and be accountable. It's not enough just to stop shaming action. We have to create a counter-shaming culture to provide the kind of nourishment and support that all mothers need. And shame is a dimmer switch that keeps us isolated, confused, and our voice and our light diminished. Shame is meant to be temporary. It's short-lived, but it's the way that we misuse it and abuse it, and the way that politicians and everyone do that as well. The world needs us more than ever to be connected and alive and vital, and shame gets in the way of that. And this is the death mother's influence. It trains us to halt what we know is right speech, right thought, and right action. And it prevents us living with authenticity and integrity. So I think we need to take accountability for the ways that we even subtly oppress and suppress and aggress towards not only our children, but towards ourselves. We need to learn how to stay the adults in the room and meet our child's intensity of emotions and behavior more skillfully. Learn how to respond to their defiance, resistance, and attack in skillful ways. We're always told to kind of, you know, leave the room, go for a walk. But there's a lot of healing that can be done if we stay in relationship with our child. It's scary for our kids to feel like they're the strongest people in the room. So it's important for us to switch our own protector muscles back on. And the problem is those protector muscles stop firing when we're in chronic shame. So that's why some of my support is around supporting parents to turn that question around from how do I protect myself from the impact of my child's behaviors to how do I become that fiercely protective presence that my child needs me to be. And there are resources available to us. And for me, relational embodied practices like leadership embodiment really help us to stay open, engaged, and connected through conflict and through opposition. They help us to increase our distress tolerance and take care of both our own needs and our child's needs at the same time. We're living under multiple layers of shame when we deserve to be resting in multiple layers of support and protection that hold us up and nourish us whilst we get on with this difficult job of parenting. So, you know, there are things that we should be ashamed about and not in a way that we get collapsed. You know, the fact that our mental health support is so inadequate, the way that we isolate and exclude children who have, disabilities. But we use shame as a cue to help us to stop repeating those behaviors again. We should be disgusted by it. But again, to do that, we need to use shame for what it's designed to do. And we also need to give shame back to the people who we should never have received it from in the first place. There's no shame in being imperfect in the presence of such an enormity of task of parenting, no shame in feeling overwhelmed and burnt out when we don't have the support, no shame in being able to keep up with the pace and the speed of the multiple demands on us without a community equipped to hold us. So some counter-shaming things that we can do. Are you still with me? Yay. Yes, a dead mother can be a man too. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yes, ruptures are good. It is the rupture that provides the relational resiliency. So they are. But it's how we move back into relationship. So I do want to get a practice in, but I want to go quickly through some counter-shaming strategies, which are really, really helpful. The first one we'll talk about is so we've got three counter-shaming attitudes, which are curiosity, playfulness, and appreciation. They're embodied attitudes. They seem really simple, but we tend to use them as interventions and techniques when actually curiosity and appreciation are moods that we need to live into. That's very, very different. Curiosity, we can tend to use it as a kind of cold fact finding, especially when we're stressed, start probing towards it. When actually curiosity it's bringing a sense of awe and a sense of fascination for the inner life of our children, which helps them to not feel alone, that, you know, there is just something that, you know, we're really deeply interested in their inner world. This also really helps children to learn that feelings are safe, and it really helps them to begin to be able to go inside and know that feelings are not scary, you know, it's safe. And curiosity helps us to bring in the not knowing and being okay with uncertainty. We don't need to know the answer. We always want to try and fix and heal and provide solutions. But when we think about the fact that actually it's being alone in intense emotions that leads to children's mental health. So it's always about this sense of coming back in connection with our children. Playfulness, that's a really good counter-shaming thing. I find play hard, I can be more curious, they're on that same spectrum. And appreciation takes us beyond tolerating feelings and behaviours, and really seeing the creative power that's behind their protective intentions. And, you know, this can be really challenging. So do we really appreciate all their behaviors as well, even if they're really unpleasant ones? You know, and yes, we can, because we can see that, you know, shame was a really powerful choice that, you know, kept us safe. And it protected us at the time that we needed to do. It was absolutely the wisest thing to do. And with all our children's behaviors, we can appreciate them that they may not be skillful expressions of behavior, but they are designed to bring more safety or dignity or belonging, more regulation back on board, try and get, you know, rid of stimulation or bring more stimulation on board, reach out for more contact. So, and we can, you know, then see it's not a comment on our parenting or identity as a parent. We don't need to be right or wrong. So, and what can we do about a few approaches? So when we've got shame, we can, depending on the type of shame that we're in, we can either resource it and repattern it in the moment. You know, we can notice the trigger and bring appreciation and curiosity to that trigger, and then we can resource ourselves through centering, through what we care about, and that helps us to kind of come back into connection. Or we may need to, if it's really deep shame, we do need the support of a safe, attuned other to help us through that. We can release shame. Release is a really good thing to do, because no matter how skilled we may be at responding to behavior, inevitably there's some shame that will stick at the end of the day. And it's important to unstick that shame and open the window a little bit wider, take a breath. You know, if we collapse, we want to start bringing those mobilizing protective energies back on board. So at the end of the day, we want to meet it. We want to meet the energy, and we want to move the energy. We want to sequence it out. Irene Lyon is a really good resource to look at that, because we particularly want to sequence out and explore the aggression and the disgust that comes out from that, because it's often that the contraction that comes down to put a stopper on aggression that prevents parents who are very, very committed to being compassionate, loving, peaceful parents will tend to find that they set boundaries that are either over the top and enforcing, or they feel too passive and they collapse. And it's when we can bring appreciation to the contraction and look for its wisdom, and that allows some of that vitality, some of that energy to come up, then that is what is going to help us to move and you know, mobilize ourselves to get the compassionate power that we need to set the boundaries. I want to get into an exercise, and I haven't got time to talk about some of the other resources, like looking to the future. We need to reclaim. Some of the other things we need to do is just reclaim our bodies, reclaim our belonging, reclaim our aliveness. I'm going to have a course talking about all of those things if you want to join me for that. So, you know, looking to the future, particularly reimagining that future, committing to that and practicing living into that on a day-to-day basis. It may just be, you know, creating your house as an oasis of dignity for your children. I can't do that for the world, but I can do that. And then I practice bringing dignity in every relationship that I have. And it just makes everything very simple. I don't have to think, I can just know whether I'm moving towards that future or moving away from it. So 5 minutes. We have 5 minutes, Georgia, to do an exercise. So,
Kirsty, I just wanted to check in with you. There are a couple of questions in the Q&A. And so obviously, again, I'm also very aware that we're sort of running a little short on time. Shall we do the exercise first? And do you think
we'll do the practice first? Yes, awesome. I'll try and do it as quickly as I can.
Oh, bless you. Let's do that.
Yes. Okay. So let me think about editing that. See, that's why I need notes, because I get so passionate and move on about this is going on. So bring to mind just a little smidgen of something that it may be a criticism, a judgment, a little bit of shame, shit that's being thrown at you. Not too much, just a little bit. Get a little bit of that edge, a little bit of that collapse. Sense what that's like in your body. And don't want to spend too long there, but you know, what's the colors and what's the energy and what's the power of it? And then I want you to externalize that, take that energy out into the space, and you're going to turn it and you're going to see it either as something like a beach ball or a stick, anything that comes to mind for you. And you're going to take what is in here and you're going to put it out there, and you're going to see this ball or this stick spinning around, going chaotic in time and space out there. You can see its flaming colors or its blackness, whatever that is for you. So you're going to see it out there in that space around you. Okay. And then it's going to start coming towards you, and get a sense of what that feels like as it starts coming towards you. And we're going to slow it down so it just gets into slow motion. Okay. Yeah. And as that's coming towards you, I want you to just notice, what is the urge, what is the impulse that you get to want to protect yourself from this ball or this stick or this object out there? Do you want to pick it up and throw it away? Do you want to have a dog come and snatch it and take it off? Do you want to get the gun out and annihilate it? My son would do that with his Nerf guns, probably. So what's that self-protective urge that comes up? And just pay attention to that. Okay. So see its colors, see it doing its job. And then we're going to go back a little bit to that centering. Bring in your length. Bring in your supports. And as you lift, you're going to get this sense of standing there, you know, as if you know and you trust that you are beheld and you are beloved and you belong. And you feel that rooted in your feet, in your legs. You allow it to come up through the spine, in your belly. So you're really standing in all of that dignity and all of that self-worth. And you look back up as you do that and you see, you know, how is that? How's that ball? How's that stick responding to you? Is it fading a little bit? Are the colors just disappearing? Or is it firing up a little bit more because it sees that as a little bit of a challenge? And as you're looking at that, and as you start to see it approaching a little bit closer into your space, I invite you to bring your arms up and your hands out in front of you. So those hands are going to be facing that ball. Okay. And if you feel that you're starting to kind of collapse a little bit, you don't feel strong enough, then imagine that we are all here holding that ball facing up there. You don't have to do this on your own. You can bring the people that were next to you at the beginning, that your supporters, your protectors alongside. We're all here holding that back. And as it starts to come into your space, you're going to stand there and you are going to say, stop. And it stops. You don't touch it. It just stays there. And notice what that feels like. Notice the energy, if you're noticing energy in your hands, in your body. It's not getting near you. And you can talk to it and you say, I don't deserve this. So you can go right on back where you came from. This is not mine to take on. And as you speak to that, can you feel it? And imagine that ball, that stick diminishing, it's losing its color. It's getting, maybe it's doing a kind of like silly balloon deflaty thing, you know, whatever it's doing. But, you know, it's losing all its power. And then get back with your hands. And you're just going to drop it. Let it land on the ground. And you just see it in front of you. There. And just notice what that feels like, what that's like. Maybe enough. Maybe that's done the job. Not interested in it anymore. Wasn't yours to have anyway. Or if it doesn't feel complete, maybe you want to get the dog to pick it up, go bury it, kick it to the curb if you want to. But maybe first of all, just before you do that, you might, if you want to, sprinkle it with a little seed of sweetness as well. Because, you know, maybe if it goes back to where it belongs or if it grows back out of that earth, next time it comes up, it could have healed a little bit. It could come out with a little bit of beauty and a little bit of light and love as opposed to this dark stuff. So get a sense of what you want to do with that. And then know that you can move off and walk towards your imagined futures. Leave it behind. Yeah. We don't have to take it all on. Some of it we don't need to meet. We don't need to work through because it's not ours to have in the first place. We've got enough of this shit to sit with already. We need to be more discerning about what we take on and get those protector muscles there so that we can shift that question around, you know, how do I protect myself from my child's behaviors towards how do I be the protector that my child needs in this world? Thank you for joining me. So Georgina, is there some questions that you think just might sum up for, you know, 1 minute?
Yeah, so there were a couple of questions in the Q&A, but we actually thought that that wonderful practice at the end may have answered some of them. So I'll just kind of quick, I'll super quick read out a couple of the questions. So Mark asked, how does a newly enlightened parent deal with a decade or more of unresolved shame with a shut down teenager?
With exactly these tools. It's curiosity, yeah, and it's appreciation. It's just that what we do is, you know, we get the pushback or we don't get the response, and then our stuff comes up rather than go, oh, and you're shut down. That's really interesting. You know, I wonder why. And you know, and we drip feed a little bit at a time, because sometimes, you know, it's too much for us to be going in there. We just need to drip feed, and we do the same stuff, but we need to be kind of gently relentless about it. Curiosity, acceptance, appreciation, you know, I wonder, and not taking it personally.
Yeah. So there are a few questions here, but I wanted to, I'll super quick because we do need to kind of wrap it up. But one lady, Rosie here, asks about whether this might work with teens on the spectrum.
I'm not quite sure kind of what might work. But yes,
with all this work, and I'm guessing,
yes, it does. I mean, that's most of the people that I'm seeing are children that have got kind of neurological, you know, diverse issues. My own child has got fetal alcohol syndrome, ADHD, sensory processing. So, you know, so that's really where I, you know, sort of drive this kind of stuff from. Yes, it does. Embodiment work is beautiful as well, because, you know, we have to be really subtle about the cues with things like, you know, like sensory stuff. It's, you know, am I a space invader? Am I sort of too much? Do I need to kind of pull back? And giving them that kind of, it's like a dance, really, being able to kind of use that. So we, the more that we're able to be subtle in our bodies, the more we can support our children to do that. Yeah, but that's a huge question, so we'd need
it. It is, yeah, absolutely.
Fine, but yes, absolutely it does, yeah.
Okay, so we are very quickly running out of time, so I need to just get in a couple of comments before the end. Yes, be aware that there is a coffee chat happening in Facebook. So hopefully there is going to be a link in the chat where you can kind of head over there if you would like to continue. Really sorry if we didn't get to your question, but hopefully a lot of the stuff that was going on in the chat may have answered them as we were going through it.
Georgina, there is one that I think is really key. Can I just answer that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Parent shame, to express their feelings towards their children. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same for us as it is our children. We give ourselves the same curiosity, the same appreciation for everything else that's coming up. And we need to find safe places for that shame to be expressed and to land. And we have to be really discerning about who we take that to. And also not to be ashamed of the shame. You know, we've all got it. So, yeah, thank you. That was really important.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for picking out the question that you felt was most on point. So just to remind everyone that the streams are all free for the next 48 hours, but we do encourage people that can afford to purchase to buy the library, just because it makes it easier for you to digest the information in your own time. I already know I have to rewatch this because paying attention to the questions meant I missed some bits. So if you felt like you didn't take it all in, then go ahead and take a look at purchasing the library. And that's also what's made it possible for this to be free for those that can't afford it. And also just quickly to let you know that the next talk coming up on the Intimacy and Relationships channel is by Stefo Shambo, and it's about overcoming sexual blockages to save or attract a healthy relationship. So if you would like to check that out, that's going to be on in an hour. And as I mentioned before, the coffee chat is happening in the Facebook group in between that time. So thank you for joining us. And thank you, Kirsty. Thank you for your talk and for your centering practices. I thought it was wonderful. And I look forward to watching it again so that I can actually take some more of it in.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for joining us all, guys.